The lake is finally beginning to thaw. We can see some grass beginning to peek through our yard. So I hear that spring is here. So in honor of the great outdoors, we're doing a little mini kind of spring break set of episodes about the importance of founders spending time outside. So two interviews. We'll bring you one today and one next week, both about the importance of really interacting with nature, of spending time outside, of hiking with friends, not only because it's, you know, good old-fashioned fun, but because it can be a really important teacher and something that really inspires perseverance, joy, problem-solving, things that are, of course, essential to life as an entrepreneur. But it can also bring a much needed reset for your brain. So before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that there is in existence a Zen Founder Facebook page. And I've been a little bit slow to the game, partially because, believe it or not, I'm an introvert and even social media activity is social activity. So it's been something that we probably should have done a long time ago. We haven't really gotten it together, but it is up now, and it's a place where we post articles that are of interest to the Zen Founder audience, more details or unedited features about the interviews or the podcast episodes that we're doing. I also have a goal to record a weekly video. So if I haven't met you in person and you wonder what face goes with this voice, the videos are something that I'm kind of having fun with as I'm learning to play with this new medium. So feel free to, find us on Facebook, like the Zen Founder page, and we'll try to bring some value and some entertainment to you there. Today's episode is a conversation that I had with Chris Blagett of Lifter LMS. He is a resident of Maine, but somebody who has lived all over the world. And his integration with nature runs deep. It's a core value of his life, and he spends a lot of time outside. And it seems to be something that really drives him and supports his success as an entrepreneur. Incidentally, in this episode, he ended up announcing two different things he hadn't been planning to announce. So you heard it here on Zen Founder, and you have to listen to the episode to find out what Chris revealed.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
We know this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder. Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
So I am so glad that you are up for this conversation today. I am looking out my window. We actually had a fresh snow last night, and my family and I are all really eager for some spring weather, and it's not quite yet come to Minneapolis. But you are in Maine, right, Chris?
That's right. Spring's not here yet either.
No spring for us. So one of the things that we're going to talk about today is the value of nature, particularly for folks who are entrepreneurs and spend maybe a lot of time in front of screens and working away in an office, trying to build the kind of life and freedom and flexibility that allows hopefully time enough to do the kinds of things you want to do. But I know that one of the things that you love to do when you're not working on your business is to be outside. So we'll talk about that. But first of all, will you give the like short version of who you are and what you do?
Sure. I am a stay-at-home dad who is obsessed with education and learning. And I have a software company called Lifter LMS, which is in the WordPress space, which makes it possible to create, sell, and protect online courses from a WordPress-powered website.
So you are an educator at heart.
Very much so. But I'm also a voracious learner, and I'm also a course creator myself. For example, my wife and I have some organic gardening courses. That was how this whole thing started.
you had something that you wanted to both learn about and then share with others, and you're like, hey, how do I do that easily online?
Absolutely. And then later, you know, we started partnering with experts around the world. For example, one time we flew to Costa Rica, we spent a winter there and met up with one of the best known leaders in the permaculture space, which is a niche within organic gardening, and filmed a 2-day workshop and turned that into an online course. So it's been quite the journey.
It's fantastic. And it sounds like it affords you the ability to be present for your little ones and then also go on some adventures.
Absolutely. My wife and I have had extreme location problems. We actually met on a glacier in Alaska, and I used to run sled dogs for quite a while up in Alaska and manage a helicopter supported tour business up there. But I'm originally from a college town in North Carolina, and my wife is from Maine. And so for a long time, we've lived in a lot of different places in a lot of different states. So location freedom was always very important to us.
Yeah. And the places that you've lived and chosen to spend time have all been, for lack of a better term, kind of wild spaces, lots of trees, animals. Like, you're not spending a lot of time in urban environments.
I melt when I end up in a city, but we've always had a philosophy that I want to live where people like to vacation. So it's got to have that quality as a part of, you know, choosing where we live. It's got to be a vacation spot, ideally near a lot of natural beauty, potentially national parks, easy access to outdoor recreation. Those are very important to us.
So when you imagine the two experiences, just for sake of comparison, the experience of being in an urban environment, walking down the street and, you know, in Boston or New York or Philadelphia or something, compared to what it feels like to go for a walk in the woods around your house, what happens in your body? Like, why do those feel so different? Why do you melt in one environment, as you say, and kind of come alive in the other environment?
It just kind of stresses me out, I would say. I feel elevated levels of anxiety in the city, lots of input, lots of noise, you know, without access to, you know, natural light and just open space. It's very difficult for me to relax. So to give a dramatic example, when I used to run sled dogs a lot, if I was, let's say it's dark out and I'm, you know, heading over a trail because it's dark a lot in the winter in Alaska and the northern lights are kind of glittering above and it's just me in the wide open space and, you know, 16 dogs heading, you know, out there, I feel completely relaxed and my mind would get to a point where it had nothing left to say and I could just truly experience being in the moment. For me, that's highly unlikely in an urban environment to be able to get to the end of the inputs and to get to the end of the internal dialogue to kind of chill out. I'm working on it. I'm open to the possibility, but it's just so much easier in the nature setting.
I read this study, I think it was in the Journal of Experimental Psychology, and they were trying to figure out the science of what you're describing. And they validated your point that the experience of being in an urban environment causes more mental fatigue than the experience of being in a natural environment. And they were arguing that because urban environments are more sensory dense, they cost a lot of like top-down processing, planning, that sort of higher order cognitive skill. But being outside gives that part of our brains a break. And so it's this way of restoring mental energy or counterbalancing like the mental fatigue that a busy urban environment can cause. So I love when science validates like what we just feel anyway.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So you run a software business, so you're spending lots of time in front of the computer. I see your videos that you're making, so I know you're often indoors. How do you integrate outside time into your daily life?
It all starts, I became obsessed with the morning routine situation. So I have like a 4-hour morning routine that starts at 5 or 6. I don't use an alarm clock anymore. I used to, you know, like a lot of entrepreneurs use coffee to go up and then alcohol to go down at the end of the day. but I now have a much healthier relationship with sleep. And one of the first things I do in the morning as part of my morning routine is I immediately, you know, after getting some water, some yerba mate or something like that, I just head out on a hike or a run. And that's how it starts. So I don't touch the computer or the technology. I do have my podcast as my guilty pleasure while I'm out in nature, or just, you know, getting that morning sunlight and getting the body moving. But my office is actually in a little cabin that I built in my backyard. It's 100 feet away from my house where I'm talking to you right now. And I have two giant picture windows and I can look out. I can see the trees. If I have the windows open, I can see my kids playing in the yard. You know, I can see our chickens over there. I can see where our garden is. So even though I may be like looking at the computer and I have the whiteboard or the PowerPoint or whatever I'm doing, or I have Zoom open for meetings and things of that nature, I'm always just like one step away from being outside. There's a creek. I do a lot of cold water immersion, which has been huge for me for de-stressing. There's a creek 100 feet away that I can go jump in if I wanted to in a matter of seconds. So I'm always very close to it.
It's not a separate box to check in your life. Like sleep, play with kids, be outside. Like it's very much integrated into your routines, your morning routine, and even the location in which you do your work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like my office tracks the way I laid out the orientation of it. I get maximum natural sunlight, and if I can take it on the road, like I've taken the business on the road before with a travel trailer, visiting national parks with the family and just being on the road indefinitely. And I personally love that kind of freedom. You know, there's times where I'm quote chained to the office or chained to the camper while everybody else is at the waterfall or whatever, but it's a small price. I mean, it's fine. There's like a good balance there.
What are some of your favorite outdoor spaces? I know that's a huge question because you've been in lots of beautiful places, but just the places that have really shaped you or you've really fallen in love with.
Some of my favorite started with rock climbing. I got into rock climbing in high school and it really opened up a whole new world to me. So, you know, there's certain big cliffs in Canada or in the North Cascades in Washington State and things like that that are really special to me. And I also, for example, took a semester off of college to hike the Appalachian Trail. So the Appalachian Trail always has a really special place for me, but as does, you know, a lot of different parts of Alaska. Southeast Alaska just blows my mind and I love it. Every time I see it on a good day when the weather's clear, there's no more beautiful place on earth. And for me, I really like the sounds of nature, like a full sensory experience. You can smell it, you can see it, you can hear it. You know, ideally you're seeing other animals and other things like that. That's what really speaks to me in terms of nature, but I'll also take what I can get. If I'm in a busier environment and I've got like a little strip of beach that I can get out on, great. So it all works, but there are some big majestic places that I feel drawn to as well.
How much of the experience of nature for you is the solitude, the sense that you sort of describe like being up in the dark with the dogs, being in Alaska, and there's an element of solitude to it.
That's a huge part of it. It wasn't until I was in college that I actually realized that I was an introverted person and carried a lot of anxiety. And I had gotten into the outdoors before that time, but I noticed whenever I was outdoors, either alone or with a small group of friends or whatever, it was always much more relaxing to me. So yeah, a big part of it for me is I'm an extreme introvert. Any kind of personality test or anything like that, I'm just an extreme introvert to the nth degree. My dream vacation is literally a desert island by myself, and I would never be bored. And that's okay. And I just need a lot of time alone. So, and nature, you know, helps with that.
How are you introducing natural spaces to your kids?
A lot of ways. A big one is they each have their own business. One of them has a chicken business, like laying hens. The other one has a flower business. So we do a lot of like working the earth and being close to our food and local food. And we have friends, you know, visiting friends on local farms, you know, we're picking our own berries and things like that. We also just spend a lot of time, you know, recreating in nature, skiing, hiking, swimming. You know, where we live, there's lakes to go swim in. And when we go to beaches, you know, we're swimming in the ocean. So it's recreation. It's there's a big part of our life is the local food kind of scene, and being a part of that with fingers in the earth and toes on the ground is a big part of that. Also, our educational choice is what's known as unschooling. So we, you know, expose them to different interests and see what they get interested in. Right now, they're part of a nature-based learning program that they go to, where they go out into the woods with other kids of different ages and, you know, learn how to make friction fire and identify plants and understand what the different bird calls mean and that kind of thing. So we try not to put much of a wall between us and the natural world. So that's the basic philosophy of it.
Yeah, it's all part of life for you. And are there ways in which your life as a naturalist, so to speak, really influence and shape how you approach your life as an entrepreneur?
100%. One of the biggest things is how I deal with adversity. I've been in some extreme situations in nature, to name a few, close encounter with large animals like grizzly bears, you know, challenging situations like on the side of some mountain in the middle of nowhere, dealing with like injuries in a remote area, things like that. That kind of stuff puts some of the problems that, and stresses of entrepreneurship, it just kind of puts it in perspective a little bit, so that it gives me the ability to remain calm under pressure. A lot of people will say, gosh, you're so level. And then I'm maybe on the inside, you know, like the duck, I'm calm on the surface, but my legs are really spinning. But I just have a lot of experience in natural environments that bring perspective to digital entrepreneurship. So that's a big one. And the other one is just operating in, I try to just operate in balance a lot with my life, because it's easy to get, especially as an entrepreneur or working in a dynamic company, to get caught up in the hustle, and it's all in all the time. And I've been on the edge of burnout myself many times, but the natural world and my habits, like my routines and trying to commit to doing like fun stuff with the kids during the week and on the weekend, it just brings a lot of balance in a world that can easily eat you alive. And, you know, you end up sleeping with your phone and you're just always on, and your humanity becomes a distant memory. That's like my worst fear.
Yeah. And it seems like some of your outdoor experiences have helped you obviously like manage stress and challenge, but also like have a healthy relationship with risk.
Big time. Yeah. Risk management is it's huge. Like you'll hear climbers say things like, I don't have a death wish, I have a life wish. And that, you know, riding around in a car on the 101 is like actually statistically a lot more risky. But when you're in nature, especially in kind of an expedition format, or you just learn how to manage risk. And it's definitely a big part of entrepreneurship. And also one of the big things about risk is just managing your energy, learning how to manage your energy, because in nature, the feedback loop is immediate. Like if you mess up in a big way with high consequences, you can't hide from it the way you can in business sometimes. Like reality will like kind of slap you in the face, whatever that means, whether that's a fall or an injury or, okay, I guess we're stuck out somewhere, we're not going to make it back to camp. Like feedback is immediate. So those, you learn how to manage risk, and those skills are definitely transferable to business.
So Chris, in thinking about, you know, this feedback loop and the level of risk that you take and the anxiety that you manage when you are in wild spaces, it also sounds like you're learning to tolerate some discomfort and persevere when you're cold or uncomfortable or something's not working the way that you want it to. And I imagine that that's also a skill that's really important in your life and business.
Absolutely. So for me, I started doing, you know, getting into long distance hiking, running. I've run marathons. I'm about to turn 40, and I haven't announced this publicly, but I'll announce it here. I'm planning on doing a 100-mile run through the what's known as the 100-mile wilderness in Maine around my 40th birthday. And that is something I'm doing like for myself in terms of, you know, just kind of like a fitness goal at turning 40 to be kind of in the best shape I've ever been in. And for me, it's also extremely meditative. Like when you go into an endurance-based event, and this I'm actually going to do alone, unsupported. And there's no escape. It's called the 100-mile wilderness because it's literally 100 miles of the Appalachian Trail. And you go in one side and you come out the other side. And for me, I'm really looking forward to it. And I have done a lot of things that required me to stay up all night or really push the edges of endurance. And I'm looking forward to that challenge. But I find that that skill set from endurance activities in nature translates to business in terms of when the things are hard or you're doing that launch and you need that push to, you know, get a million things done, or just to be that lighthouse and that rock for your team when you're leading as an example of really leaning in when it's important to lean in. That endurance skill set is something that came out of nature that has been vital to not only surviving, but just thriving when there are those needs to push.
What do you tell yourself when you are, you know, at mile 72 and it's cold or you're tired, or like, how do you talk yourself through those moments when there's probably a part of your brain and a part of your body that's like, this is not a good idea. Please stop now. How do you talk to yourself about that?
Part of it is,
or maybe you don't have those thoughts. Maybe that's just me.
No, those things are there for sure. Part of it is what is real. So there's a saying like in endurance athletics that, you know, when you think you're done, you're really like, I don't know, like 30% done, like to actual total body failure or whatever. And I've done things like, to give you an example, I consider myself somebody who experiments with my health. Some people call it biohacking. So for example, I've done a 3-week water fast. So when you're on day two and if you're hungry, you can go so much further than you think is possible. And it was actually through that water fast that I did a lot of great things for myself as a entrepreneur in terms of health. Reset my circadian rhythm. So I stopped staying up till 4 a.m. and getting up at like 9, being tired, to like actually being in sync with the sun. And I was able to come out the other side with a much healthier relationship with coffee. And all of those things, like what the mind is saying, I mean, I'm open to it, but just like in nature, the feedback loop, there's some thoughts, you know, are real, but your brain's trying to survive and make sure you don't do anything stupid. But you can, you know, we're amazingly capable animal that this built world that we see around us has come out of, you know, challenging assumptions. So I'm a big fan of not being risky. I mean, if something's injured or it's, you know, there's like real alarm bells, but sometimes the alarm bells aren't really catastrophic.
It sounds like you're honing your ability to hear the difference between real thoughts or real sensory input about your body that's a warning sign versus the kind of anxious, neurotic thoughts that maybe are speaking loudly. But as you've had all of these experiences and spending all of this time in wild spaces and doing this endurance training and just your 4 hours of peace and movement in the morning, you're really training your brain how to tell the difference between those, as you call them, real thoughts and the other kind of thoughts, the thoughts that are more distractions.
Yeah, it's a self-awareness. Like sometimes, you know, those thoughts aren't even, they may be subconscious, but then you're able to observe them. And they bubble up to the conscious layer after a certain point. So, and another one I recommend if anybody's interested in getting into this is the cold water stuff. What you think you're capable of in cold water is, not only is it probably much more exposure than you realize, but it can also have an extreme calming effect on stress, in terms of stress and the ability to sleep. There's some neat tools out there to, you know, work with cold water exposure. There's an online course by a guy, Wim Hof. He calls it the Wim Hof method. It combines cold breathing and meditation. I highly recommend it. That's something I've been into lately.
For folks who are really, you know, intrigued by what you're doing and how you're thinking about your relationship with the natural world, do you write about this somewhere? Or are you, I mean, I know you have a whole business life online, but yeah, for people who are curious about what you're thinking about this part of your life, is there a place they can connect with you or follow you?
I write about it a little bit on Twitter, at Chris Badgett, but I'm also in the process of launching a new podcast that deals with this side of me. It's called Integrated Humans. It hasn't launched yet, but it's something I'm working on because I want to share this kind of stuff with more people and have conversations with other people who are, you know, working to integrate different things like nature to have a more holistic life. Because I think that what's happening is when there's a lot of trauma and problems in society, there is a disintegration. Something is, you know, missing and not clicking in. So when we integrate the parts, then we're, you know, fully living. And that's something I want to do and explore with the Integrated Humans podcast.
Well, that sounds like it's going to be a great addition to the podcast world. And I know that I've always really appreciated the way that you have hosted this kind of conversation, whether it's on Twitter or the couple times I've gotten to meet you in person. And I think you do emanate that kind of integration. And I think helping people think about how to themselves be more integrated and giving some tips and strategies is going to be a great resource. So when you launch, let me know and we'll spread the word.
Sounds great. Well, thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for your time. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.